Welcome to VBAC Birth Stories. Join us as we speak to Australian women about their journey towards a vaginal birth after cesarean.
In Australia, the cesarean rate has risen to 36%. That's one of the highest rates in the developed world. We hope that by sharing these stories, women and their care providers are able to gain insight into why these rates are on the increase. We also get to meet and understand the women behind these numbers.
We are your hosts, Mel and Steph, and we hope you enjoy Season 3 of VBAC Birth Stories. Hi everyone, hope you're all keeping safe and well, and thank you for your patience as we have been working to deliver Season 3 to you, and we are excited to finally have this underway. We can't believe that we'll be entering our third year of producing the podcast. We now have nearly 50 episodes and we have had over 100,000 downloads, which is pretty incredible. So thank you to anyone who has sent us a message of support over the last couple of years and shared the podcast with someone you know. And thank you to all the women who have reached out to share their VBAC journey. We hope someday to be able to speak to you all. In this, our third year of running the pod, we have decided to take the plunge and set up a Patreon account. If you would like to make a donation to us, you can do so from just $2 a month. No obligation, of course, but if you are loving the pod and would like to show your support, and if you're able to donate, we would be very appreciative as it would help towards the running costs of the podcast and just generally keep us going strong. We also have partnered with some great birthy businesses recently to bring you some special discounts on their offerings, so be sure to check them out. As by supporting our affiliates, you would be supporting us as well. So please head to the show notes for the links to their websites, and you will find our link to Patreon there too. Now, to get Season 3 underway, we have a beautiful VBAC journey from Melbourne mum Michelle. Michelle went into spontaneous labour with her first child, but was recommended to have an emergency cesarean close to the finish line of her labour. But Michelle wouldn't say it was a true emergency in that sense of the word. Michelle returned to hospital in her second pregnancy, but did not feel supported in her desire to have a VBAC. And this, coupled with a bit of perinatal anxiety and COVID hospital restrictions, Michelle took control of her second birth in the final trimester and ultimately hired a private midwife to birth her baby boy at home. She speaks of the challenges with her recovery after having a VBAC, which is very insightful. And we thank Michelle for her honesty. We hope you enjoy listening to Michelle's story. We know that there's a lot to take away from her journey, whether you are on a VBAC pathway yourself or a maternity care provider listening in. So thank you, Michelle, and please enjoy this episode. Thanks, Michelle, for joining us today to share your VBAC journey. Would you like to start by maybe telling us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, thanks for having me. So a little bit about me. I am a registered nurse and I have two little ones. So I've got a six-month-old, so Logan, who's my VBAC baby, and a two-and-a-half-year-old daughter, Tiffany. I live also with my husband. We live here in Melbourne and I'm just on mat leave at the moment and enjoying just time with my babies.
Before you fell pregnant the first time, did you have any preconceived ideas about birth and pregnancy and how you thought that would all go for you?
Yeah, so before I got pregnant, I guess my idea about pregnancy was very general and very much influenced by what I saw on TV. I used to watch the show One Born Every Minute.
Oh, I used to love that show.
And I think a lot of women in the past have watched it. And if you know about it, it's very dramatic and everything on that show is very intense. And they seem to choose the most complicated births. It's always usually a happy ending at the end of the day. But that was kind of my idea, that pregnancy is hard, labor is hard, it's scary, it's painful, I'm going to scream a lot, and just lots of panic involved. And also when you see, you know, Hollywood movies, they also try to dramatize pregnancy and delivery. So then started to do my own research. Once we decided that we want to start trying for our first baby, and I started, you know, learning about vitamins, learning about the different types of births you can have, you know, calm births, hypnobirths, things like that, and how to prepare yourself. So I was already starting to do the research before we even got pregnant, and I was on contraception at that time. So I also researched about, you know, sort of how long it takes to fall pregnant if you're on that, and I thought it would take a while for us. So I did things like to use an ovulation kit as well, just to make sure that I don't miss the window. But luckily for us, we got pregnant fairly easily and it didn't take long. So it was a fairly straightforward pregnancy with my first one, no complications at all. And yeah, I just sort of tried to educate myself as much as possible.
Where did you book in to have your birth? Was it in a public hospital, private? Like, what sort of model of care did you choose?
I chose public just because I had looked at both the benefits of private and public. And in my location, their hospital maternity ward had actually just been refurbished. It had all the latest technology and it's beautiful. So in my opinion, I just thought it would still be good to go through public, basically. I didn't feel the need to go private at that time. Although, because I had done my research prior to getting pregnant, I was really keen on home birth, actually, for my first. I did have a meeting with a private midwife before I booked into the hospital to find out about home birth. And it sounded lovely. And we talked about water birth. And it sounded like it was going to be challenging, but definitely the type of birth that I want. But because it was my first pregnancy, my parents and all my friends that I told, they were all really apprehensive about me having a first birth at home, not really knowing what to expect and having fear as well around the actual process. I sort of agreed with everyone. I said I would be happy to go to the hospital at the end of all my, I guess, investigating on what type of birth that I want to have. At the end of the day, we settled for the hospital and that was fine. I was happy with my decision at the end. Yeah.
Michelle, do you think being a nurse and coming from that kind of background, did that influence any of your decisions about the type of care that you were after or considering a home birth? Did that influence any of that?
Yes, definitely. I think because I have a health background myself, I do trust health practitioners with the skills that they have. And midwives are certainly very skilled. Most of them are very skilled and very experienced if you look for the right ones. I myself was interested in becoming a midwife earlier on in my career, but I didn't end up studying. But I'm very much interested in women's health, and I definitely felt safe in the hands of a private midwife. I also respect and value midwives in hospital as well. And of course, obstetricians and doctors, I do believe they know what they're doing. And I trust medical professionals, being one myself. But that's why I felt that if I had a home birth, I would still be safe. So you can be safe in hospital, but I do believe you can be safe at home as well. As long as you've got a low risk pregnancy and you've got very good practitioners with you that know what they're doing. And also you just sort of interview them, and if it feels right to you with a person who's going to be helping you with your birth, then I think that's important. But definitely trusting healthcare workers is something that tends to come easily to me, because I know that it takes a lot of research, a lot of study to get to where they are. So yeah, definitely that did influence my decision. And also, even though I am a nurse, I'm not a huge fan of being in hospital. I trust hospitals and hospitals are great, but I just prefer to only be in hospital, say if I'm sick or if I really need to be. That's just kind of my take on things. I've worked in hospitals before, and yeah, it's not really the happiest place all the time to be in.
Michelle, where are you from originally?
So I'm from Zimbabwe originally. So I was born in Zimbabwe. And then I moved to Australia with my family at the age of 12.
But I was also curious about your mum. Your mum gave birth, obviously, back home in Zimbabwe. What were her births like? And yeah, just curious.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, she definitely tells me about her births a lot. And that's something that's also helped me to sort of form my idea about birth. But she says her births, they were all challenging. They were all vaginal births. She gave birth in hospital. Yeah, I think most people in Zimbabwe will give birth in hospital. Anyone from my parents' age and younger probably gave birth in hospital. I know that my dad, his mom gave birth on her way to hospital, actually. And she had my dad quite young. That birth story is interesting because my mom and dad tell me that my dad was born by the side of a river. She was walking to hospital and went into labor, and she just gave birth outside by the side of the river. So that's something interesting. Wow. But otherwise it would have been in hospital. Yeah. But yeah, no, I love listening to her stories every time she does tell me, because yeah, I love birth stories. Yeah. And it helps. I think it definitely helps.
Did you want to take us to the end of your first pregnancy and what happened there? Did you go into spontaneous labor, or were there any other complications that were going on towards the end of that pregnancy?
With my first pregnancy, everything went perfectly. And I was always told that first pregnancies, your baby will never come on their due date, and they're usually late. That's what I've always been told. So when I got to 40 weeks, I was already feeling a lot of Braxton Hicks contractions, and that had been happening for about 2 weeks. But I just thought, oh, these are just Braxton Hicks. There's nothing going on here. And I didn't think much of the contractions that were happening on that 40-week day. I had been having contractions close together. They were quite strong, and they were long lasting, more than a minute. And I think that night, the night before I went into labor, they were probably about a minute to 3 minutes apart. But I still kind of felt like, nah, this is probably just Braxton Hicks still. I just didn't think it was actually happening. Plus, I wasn't in any pain during those contractions. They were just very strong. But that same day that I turned 40 weeks pregnant is when I went into spontaneous labor. So I went into labor that morning around 10 a.m. The contractions got really, really strong. And again, I still didn't think I was in labor at that time. I was in a lot of pain, but I thought, oh, this is going to pass. So what had happened was that morning I woke up, and we were living with my parents at that time because my parents were going to help for the first few weeks with the baby. So we just moved in with them to stay with them for extra help. I woke up and I told my mom, I said, Mom, I've got these contractions and they're really strong, but I think it's Braxton Hicks. And my mom thought, oh, maybe you might be going into labor. And I thought, nah, surely not. So she said, look, go and have a shower or a bath just in case, and just get dressed just in case you do go into labor. So I did that. And whilst I was in the bath, they just got more and more intense. So I thought, oh, let me just get out just in case it gets too painful that I can't come out. Got out, got dressed, went downstairs. And the moment I got down the stairs, I just got hit with this really super strong contraction. It sort of brought me to my knees and I just couldn't move. And then my husband, he saw me and he just was like panicking. He's like, oh my God. And he's like, are you okay? And he was just freaking out. And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. But oh, this pain is just really strong. It's not going away. And I'm like, oh, look, perhaps just call the hospital just in case and just let the nurses know I'm having these strong pains. He rings the hospital. He tells them, oh, my wife's having pain. She thinks maybe she might be in labor, but she's not sure. She just wants you to check her out perhaps. And then they say, okay, can you put her on the phone because we need to speak to her. So they put me on the phone and they started talking to me and they asked me what the pain was and what was happening. And because I was able to talk through my contractions, they told me that, oh, you're probably not in labor. Just stay home. You'll be fine. It'll probably go away. And then I said, okay. And then we hung up. But I wasn't really happy with that response. I thought maybe they'll say, just come in just in case and we'll check you out and then you can go home if there's nothing. But they didn't. They just told me to stay home. But the pain wasn't going away. It was just getting worse and worse. So I just said, look, let's just go to hospital anyway. If they tell me to go home, then fine. But I don't feel comfortable staying home with this much pain. It's just too much. So we got into the car, grabbed my hospital bag and got to the hospital. And the moment we got there, the ED nurse took, the triage nurse, she took one look at me and she said, okay, wheelchair straight up into the maternity ward. And when we got to the maternity ward, they took one look at me. They just said, okay, straight into the birth suite. They didn't even do any checks or anything like that. They just took me straight into the birth suite. And within a couple of minutes, there was somebody looking up my dress to check how far I was dilated. And they were like, okay, you're 9 centimeters. And I'm like, oh, okay, what does that even mean? Like, is the baby coming out? Like, I didn't understand anything that was happening. It was just happening so quickly. Then all of a sudden I said, okay, I need to poo. And I really need to go, I need to poo. And they're like, oh, that means, my mom's like, that means that the baby's coming out. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. I just need to poo. And I just didn't understand what that, you know, what that meant. So
was your mom with you as well as your husband?
Yes, both my mom and my husband. Actually, the first time I had my mom, my husband, my sister, even my dad was there, but he was sort of waiting outside. Yeah, so there was a lot of people with me the first time I had my baby. So my mom and the midwife, they helped me to the loo. And when I dropped my undies, obviously they were covered in blood and I sort of freaked out. I was like, oh my God, what's going on? And I just, because this went from 0 to 100 in like this a space of just a few minutes, because I was completely fine half an hour before that at home. My parents also lived close to the hospital, about 5 minutes. So we got to the hospital pretty quickly. So for all that to be happening like that, that just kind of freaked me out a lot because I just wasn't prepared mentally for that. So they took me back to the bed because, of course, I didn't end up needing to poo. It was just the pressure of the baby down below. So I got back on the bed and they started trying to put monitoring on my belly. But, of course, they couldn't get a reading. And now I know that it's probably because the baby was too low. So that's why they couldn't get a reading. But they didn't explain that to me at the time. Then they decided, okay, we need to put a scalp clip on so we can try and get the baby's heart rate that way. And then they said, but we'll see how you go for a few minutes and then we'll do that. Or maybe they were waiting for the doctor. I'm not really 100% sure. But about maybe 15 minutes, 20 minutes passed and I was getting this urge to push. So I told the midwife, I feel like I need to push. And then she goes, don't push. And I'm like, oh, but I feel like I really need to. And then my body just started pushing on its own. And I was trying not to push, but you know, it's kind of impossible to fight that urge to push once you get it. And so they kept telling me, stop pushing. And because I didn't know how to stop, that was making me even more panicked, more scared, more anxious. I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm going to hurt my baby because I'm pushing and they're telling me not to push. This is going to, you know, something's going to go wrong. And I was just really scared and I felt like I was doing the wrong thing. I just felt like things were not going right at all. So after about maybe 20 minutes, 30 minutes of that, and being in intense pain as well, they gave me gas for that. I asked for an epidural. I said, can I get an epidural at least or something else because this gas isn't working? And they refused. They said, no, it's too late. The baby's coming. You can't have an epidural now. And I said, what? And then I got even more upset because I was in so much pain and there was nothing I could do about it. All it was just me laying on the bed and there was a student midwife there as well. That was at the time, I just remember thinking to myself, oh my God, why is she looking at me? This is so embarrassing because I was just, you know, on the bed, legs out and didn't know who she was. And she was just standing there staring at me and it just made me feel awkward as well. And
Michelle, sorry to interrupt, had they asked your consent for the student midwife to be present?
I think they might have asked when I got there, but of course I was already kind of hysterical with pain at the time. So for me, I was just kind of like, okay, I probably would have been like, yes, you know, whatever you need to just help me.
We know how you said you were laying on the bed. Were your feet in stirrups as well?
No, they were not in stirrups.
You were laying. Did you feel comfortable in that position? Is that the position that you took yourself, or was that a position that you were told to assume?
I was told to be in that position because they needed to do monitoring. So there was no other position that I could really do. I did want to get onto my knees or sort of get on, you know, on all fours. And you know, if I feel like if I'd gotten into a different position, I might have been able to get a bit more relief, especially on my back, because my back was killing me. But yes, I was told I have to lay down because they have to put on monitoring. So I didn't really have a choice in terms of, well, I wasn't offered any other choices, basically, in terms of my moving around. And even going to the loo, they wanted me back on the bed as soon as possible so that they could obviously do monitoring, which they were not able to do, unfortunately, for them.
Your waters hadn't broken at this point, or they had?
No, they hadn't broken.
And so the monitoring was just the band on your belly because they couldn't put the scalp clip on yet, right?
Yes, exactly. Because the waters hadn't broken, they couldn't put the scalp clip just yet. So they wanted to wait a bit and see if the waters would break by themselves. And it was about half an hour, I think, or so that they waited from when they couldn't get the monitoring on. And then they got an obstetrician, a young obstetrician, to come over, and he broke my water. And that did give me a bit of relief in terms of the pressure, but it didn't do anything to speed up the labor. In fact, it probably just made me want to push even more. Like, it increased my urge to push. And at the same time, they were saying to me, don't push. So, because I wasn't yet 9 centimeters. And when they broke the water, they did see that there was a bit of meconium in there. And so that was kind of the first red flag for them. But then they said, okay, we'll just wait a little bit and see how it goes. I think they waited like 10, 15 minutes. It wasn't very long. And then they said, okay, we'll try and put the scalp clip on now. And then it wouldn't stick. They couldn't get it on. So then they said, okay, that's not working. Yeah, so what they did was they just ended up suggesting that I have a C-section because they couldn't get the monitoring to work, basically.
So, do you know if they tried the Doppler at all for monitoring?
Yeah, I don't remember them using a Doppler at all, actually. No. Hmm. Do not remember a Doppler being used.
Yeah.
Okay. So at that point, I guess I was just, I was in a lot of pain. I was really scared. I didn't really know what was going on. There was a lot of people going in and out. They couldn't get me an epidural. And yeah, the doctor said, look, we don't know if your baby's okay or not. There's a bit of meconium. You're not really progressing any further. And one thing they did mention to me is that I had quite a bit of swelling around the cervix. So it was kind of making the opening a little bit more closed than when I first arrived. So they suggested that I have a C-section. So it wasn't the usual C-section, in my opinion, where they go, okay, we have to get you in or else it's going to be, you know, a devastating outcome. It wasn't like, okay, we, you know, knock her out, get her in the theater. They did ask me if I want a C-section, but they strongly suggested it. And of course, being a first-time mum and not having given birth before, I just was thinking about my baby, and I was thinking also about not being in pain. So I was thinking to myself, whatever you need to do to deliver my baby safely, to get me out of pain, And if you think I need it, then of course I need it. So yes, let's have a C-section. And yeah, but at the same time, I was thinking that I was also really devastated that I couldn't push the baby out and that I couldn't deliver. And I did feel like at that point that I had failed. But at the end of the day, I trusted the healthcare system there, trusted them just to deliver my baby safely. So that's what we did. So they took me into theatre, braced myself every time I had a contraction in theatre, and it was really hard for them to get the epidural in. So I had to get them to stop every few minutes because the contraction kept coming on. And eventually I went numb and I finally got relief. And and my baby was born. But a few minutes after I got in, it was all just a bit hazy. And I can't really remember that much after that. Because, it was just, my vision was just like blurry. And I just found myself just kind of in a light consciousness. I just wasn't really aware of what was happening around me. So I saw my baby when my baby was born, but I don't really remember much after that. So yeah. And to me, it felt like I was in there for 30 minutes max, but my family says I was in there for a few hours. So that's just an example of how it was just a bit of a blur to me. But so the whole thing was dramatic for me. It was pretty much like what you see on TV in terms of how intense everything was. Yeah, but at the end of the day, I ended up with the C-section.
Was your baby brought to you? Did you have skin-to-skin in theatre? What happened there?
No, I didn't have any skin-to-skin in theatre. Like I said, when she came out, I think they handed her to my husband. He might have had skin to skin with her, I think, and he sort of showed her to me, and I didn't hold her until after I got out of theatre. So it was probably a few hours after I gave birth to her that I held her. Yeah. Then of course I stayed in hospital 4 days whilst they just did all the checks and made sure everything was fine with the C-section. At the end of it, the C-section, for an emergency C-section, it went okay, but I was left feeling like I didn't really get the opportunity to allow my body to maybe to have enough time in labor, and I felt like the labor was cut short, and so that was bit of motivation for me to look into having a VBAC the second time. And I do remember at the hospital before they did the C-section, the doctor said to me, look, Michelle, I'm strongly suggesting that you have a C-section just because we can't monitor your baby. We haven't been able to get any of our monitoring to work. So your baby could be in distress or your baby could be fine. We just don't know, and we can't take the risk of not knowing, so we should probably do a C-section. But if you want to have a natural birth next time, that's fine, that should be totally fine. So that's what he told me when I had before I gave consent to have the C-section. He made sure that I understood that it would be okay to have a VBAC. And of course, when I got pregnant with my second baby, they said the same thing, I can have a VBAC. So that was kind of a good thing to know that they didn't think it would be a problem because I was so far in my labor when I got there already.
Did someone come and give you a debrief afterwards and explain things to you, or?
No one gave me a debrief about why things happened the way they did. A lot of it was in my discharge summary, I guess, the reasons why. So from my discharge summary, I can remember what they wrote there as reasons for C-section. So there were a few things. So there was the meconium, that was their first red flag. And then, of course, because they couldn't get any monitoring to work, they put in their query rupture and query fetal distress, as in they're not sure. There could be a rupture, there could be fetal distress, but it wasn't something that they put in as a certain diagnosis. So those were the main three reasons why they suggested the C-section.
What about breastfeeding in the hospital during those 4 days and that part of everything? What happened there?
For breastfeeding was a bit of a challenge the first time. My milk didn't come through. And I know now that sometimes having a C-section can delay your milk from coming through. So it didn't come through. I was trying to express, but what I was expressing really wasn't much. It was meconium. And of course, the first day or two, if you're just getting a little bit, it doesn't matter too much. But by day four, they really want you to be kind of getting a good supply of milk. And that's another reason why they kept me there for 4 days, to see how it would go with my milk production and to make sure my baby wasn't losing too much weight. But each day my baby was losing weight. And of course, it's normal to lose weight if you're a newborn, but not more than 10%. So by day four, she had lost about 10% of her body weight. And even though I was trying to hand express, I didn't have a pump at that time. I'm not sure. I can't remember if they offered me a hospital pump. I don't think so. I was just doing a hand expressing at that time only, and just giving her what I could. And so by the end of day four, we were now giving her some formula, but I was still determined to breastfeed. So I did get referred to a lactation consultant, but it wasn't until week two, actually, that I got referred to a lactation consultant. So yeah, and then I sort of just worked with her to try and bring my milk supply up. And eventually I was breastfeeding by week five and only supplementing one bottle of formula. So that was, it was a bit of a challenge, but we got there in the end with breastfeeding.
So Tiffany, when she was born, did she have any issues? Like, what was her APGARs? Were they all fine in the end?
And yeah, all fine.
And
yeah,
she didn't need anything for the meconium, like any suction, are you aware?
Or? She was perfectly fine. Yeah, there was no problems at all with her. Her breathing was perfect. She didn't need anything at all. They did get a pediatrician to come and check her, just because it's the standard protocol at the hospital. And the pediatrician said she was perfect. So I think the only thing she had was a bit of jaundice, but I think a lot of babies get that for the first sort of couple of weeks. And then, yeah, it was fine after that. And she sort of develops the jaundice a little bit later on, probably also due to not breastfeeding as much as well. I know breastfeeding can help to reduce the jaundice a little bit.
How did you feel that bonding with Tiffany was after the cesarean?
For me, it was pretty good, actually. I was lucky that I didn't have any issues with that. The only thing I can add is that having the C-section, because I guess I was really disappointed in myself for not being able to give birth. I just kept on blaming myself, like, oh, maybe I did something wrong or whatever. Like, but now I know that it definitely wasn't my fault, or not. It wasn't anything for me to be ashamed of having a C-section. It's still birth, and it's hard to have a C-section. So it's just another form of birth, and your body's still strong and capable, even if you don't give birth vaginally. But yeah, I did get a bit of postpartum depression following the C-section and her birth. And I was supported by the maternal and child health nurse who was coming to see me at home. Also, I joined a mother's group, which was really helpful as well, just in terms of dealing with feelings around, I guess, inadequacy and just stress at the time. Because another thing that happened at the same time I gave birth was that my husband, actually a couple of days before I went into labor, he was in a car accident as well. So that was kind of stressful to deal with, and he was injured a little bit. Luckily it wasn't that bad, but the car was completely written off. So that was something that was also stressing me at the time. So there's a lot of things going on at that time. Yeah.
In terms of your, I guess, reflections on your first birth and kind of where you sat with your birth before you felt pregnant again? Because I know you mentioned you spoke to a private midwife initially before your first birth. Did you contact a private midwife to debrief about your first birth? How did you, I guess, process what happened in the first birth and kind of move on from there?
To be honest, the thing that helped me the most to process my first birth was actually being on social media. It's an unusual way to deal with things, but once I had my baby, I started to meet a lot of other mums online that gave birth via C-section, and I discovered that they shared a lot of the same feelings that I had. And then I also met some other moms that kind of recovered from the idea that their body had failed and that, you know, the C-section was bad and was wrong, and, you know, just had all those negative feelings. And I just got surrounded online by a lot of positive kind of affirmations about the type of birth that I had had. I was still a mom, still able to give birth, and I should still feel proud of my birth journey regardless of how, you know, my baby came into the world. So that actually helped a lot with my perspective on what C-sections were like. So yeah, before that I just felt like C-section equals failure. That was just my own personal interpretation of it. And once I realized that, you know, there's a lot of women who had gone through the same and come out still feeling good about the experience, that also changed my experience as well. So I don't see the C-section as a failure anymore. I actually see it as a good option if it's an elective C-section. Of course, if it's an emergency C-section, the feelings are different because you're not expecting it and you're not mentally prepared for it most of the time. But with my second baby, I sort of prepared myself for anything, and that helped me a lot as well. But being on social media for me has been amazing as a mom. You would think it's the opposite because you think social media is full of unrealistic expectations about motherhood, but I actually found there's both online. So you can actually choose what you want to follow. You can follow the unrealistic expectations. And of course, that's going to make you feel down about your own experience when you see, you know, the perfect births, the perfect environment, everything happening beautifully, you know, beautiful baby, beautiful outcomes, beautiful moms. And you think that's how your reality is going to be as well. But you can also see the raw, unedited version of motherhood and read real stories and listen to real stories about what it's like to actually go through something that's a bit traumatic and then come out at the end of it still feeling positive about the experience at the same time. So for me, yeah, definitely social media has helped me a lot, especially Instagram. Of course, there's other apps which you can go on that have sort of discussion boards, but yeah, definitely reaching out to other mums online has been super helpful.
And then so at what stage did you decide that you wanted to fall pregnant again and potentially go for a VBAC?
Yeah, because the first time I had my C-section, I was told I could have a VBAC. I sort of, in my mind, always wanted that. I just thought, okay, well, next time I'll definitely try to do it naturally. So I started doing a lot of research after I had my first baby about VBACs. And my husband and I had already discussed that we do want to have children spaced out over 2 years. So we were waiting for that 2-year mark to try again for another baby. But in that time, I was still doing research about VBACs. And of course, I discovered VBAC Link, which was really super useful in terms of giving me knowledge about how other women have coped with having a VBAC or how they've planned on having one and how it happened. And reading a few books from the library about VBACs. And yeah, and of course, in that time, COVID happened, and COVID has changed a little bit about how women give birth, and that, you know, there's a little bit less support now, especially in the hospital. You can't have your partner with you for appointments, and you can't have your partner with you for scans. So COVID changed my birth plan a little bit, because I had planned to go back to the same hospital to give birth. And when I got pregnant, I registered at that hospital. I didn't bother seeking out a midwife straight away like I did with my first birth. I just thought, I'll just go to the hospital, it'll be fine, I'll have a VBAC there, because they were also supportive of me having a VBAC. But as COVID progressed and my pregnancy progressed, my appointments became over the phone appointments, and my face-to-face appointments started to become very, very short, very brief, very vague. And I just felt like I wasn't really able to open up and get the answers I wanted about how they were going to facilitate me to have a VBAC. So I would go into my appointments and I would ask them, okay, so since I'm going to have a VBAC, I just want to ask about the different positions that you might help me to do that. And then they would say, oh, look, yeah, of course you can have a VBAC, but you have to keep an open mind that anything can happen and you might end up with a C-section. And it's highly unlikely that you'll be able to go into many positions, because we will need to put monitoring on you, so you'll be on your back. And I said, oh, okay, so I'll be on my back, I won't be able to move around. They'll be like, well, you can move around a little bit, but really, we just really, really need you on your back, because we need to keep the monitoring on you, because you've had a C-section before. And so every time I asked a question at my appointments, they would be, yes, you can, of course you're having a VBAC, but then they would say, but, and then go back to, you had a C-section before, you need to keep an open mind, it can happen again. And rather than giving me more information about VBACs and even the risk factors about VBACs, they would just be constantly just saying to me, just keep your mind open for a C-section. And so that kind of made me nervous about the fact that I just had the feeling that they were going to push me into another C-section. Every time I went there, I think I only had about 2 face-to-face appointments the entire time that I was seeing them. The rest were over the phone. So just general, how are you feeling? Any nausea, any pain? You know, okay, you're good. Okay, right. And that was it.
Did you feel, Michelle, as though that the telehealth was inadequate in terms of prenatal care?
Yeah, I definitely feel like telehealth just wasn't the best way to go with pregnancy appointments. They don't listen to the heart rate of the baby. They can't measure what your fundal height is. They won't be able to observe any other symptoms, like say if you had swelling in your feet that you might not notice or something like that. I just feel like it was a little bit hard to organize a lot of things over the phone. I do remember that the second pregnancy, I did end up with a perinatal depression, unfortunately. Like just a lot of, I still had a lot of anxiety, a bit of depression. And I think a lot of my anxiety was coming from the fact that I just felt like I didn't really know what was going to happen at the end of my pregnancy. And not that I was feeling out of control, but I was feeling like I wasn't really being listened to a lot of the time. And they were helpful in terms of, they tried to organize like counseling and that for me, but I think they just didn't end up getting a chance to do that. So I did end up getting my own, I just went to my doctor and got help through my doctor. I think it was just hard for them to coordinate a lot of things over the phone. So I wouldn't recommend them to have a lot of over the phone appointments for maternity care.
You spoke before about in your first pregnancy, you had entertained the idea of a home birth. Were you thinking about that now in your second pregnancy at all?
I started to think about that around 32 weeks, when I was about 32 weeks pregnant. So I was already in my third trimester. And what had happened was I went in, I think it was for my second or third appointment, I'm not sure, because there wasn't many appointments that I had face to face, but I went in for my appointment. And something the nurse said just triggered me to feel like I cannot give birth there. And I started to panic when I left that appointment. And I was speaking to one of my friends who suggested that maybe if I get a doula to come with me, they could advocate for me to say no to a C-section or no to certain interventions that might lead to one or an outcome that I just don't want, or they can help me into different positions and things like that. So my friend suggested I get a doula, and I ended up getting somebody to help me, luckily. When I called the hospital to let them know that my doula is going to be coming with me, because at that time they had a 2-support-person policy, so I thought it would be good to have my husband and a doula there instead of my mom and my husband. And then they told me that, oh, actually, no, you can't have your doula there. And we've just changed the policy again because of the COVID restrictions. We now need to have only 1 support person. And so when I heard that, that made me panic even more. I was like, oh no, I really need someone else there. My husband's helpful. He can be supportive, but he's not the type of person to notice everything. And he's not, obviously not trained like a doula. Doulas would notice small things that, you know, the staff would be trying to do that maybe are not in my best interest or what I want in terms of my birth plan. So I just felt that having my husband there was not going to be enough support. And that's when I just started calling and calling midwives to see if anyone was available to do a home birth for me. And I did a lot of research about home birth before I started calling as well. I also spoke to my parents and I said, look, I don't feel comfortable going into hospital just with my husband. I just feel like it's not going to end well for me. And I was just really scared of going into hospital. And so my mom said, look, if you don't feel comfortable in hospital and if you're scared to be in hospital, then don't go to hospital. Just see if you can find someone. And so that's when I started calling midwives. And I think I called almost 20 midwives because it was so late in the last minute that, of course, all of them were already booked out for months. And because of COVID, they actually did say that they were busier. A lot of people are having more home births now because of the hospital restrictions. Yeah, it took a while, but I ended up finding a midwife that was able to take me on literally with less than 2 months' notice. So that was really good. And she sprung into action straight away, organized an appointment, did a really thorough health history, more thorough than the hospitals, if I must say. And yeah, I just felt super comfortable with the midwife that I chose. We sat down together for about 3 or nearly 4 hours and did an extremely detailed birth plan. So that also gave me a lot of confidence in my decision to have a home birth as well. And we had 2 midwives to help us because you have to have a backup midwife as well. And both of them were really lovely. They were both really knowledgeable and experienced. They actually helped me with my residual feelings that I had about my previous birth as well. They did also prepare me for a C-section in case of emergency, but I just felt super comfortable and confident in their ability to help me with a home VBAC. And so after I got them in, all my anxiety just went away, all my fear just went away, and I was super excited to give birth. I just couldn't wait. So it was a completely different experience once I felt like I was in control.
That's great. And your husband, yeah, I assume, was on board with this new plan?
Yeah, he was 100% on board with whatever made me happy. And he also wasn't happy with the way that my care was going in the hospital, just in terms of he also felt like I might be pushed into another C-section, which is not what he wanted for me, because he wanted for me what I wanted for myself as well. So he was really supportive with that. And we did a lot of running around in the last minute trying to get all the things for home birth set up because we'd never done one. And then I started watching more home birth videos online, and that really helped as well with figuring out what to have there and what to set up. And just creating a peaceful, calm environment.
Did you do anything else that was different in terms of birth preparation for this?
Yes. Birth? Yes, definitely. So the biggest thing that I did this time that really changed the game for me was affirmations. So I started to read a lot of affirmations. And one of my friends who had also had a HBAC sent me some recordings that she had listened to during her pregnancy. And that really, really helped me. So it was just a beautiful track with really nice relaxing music in the background and just a woman reciting affirmations that were really, really positive and just encouraging, and to just trust my body and boost my confidence in my ability to birth and that everything will be okay, and just release any tension and worry and anxiety. So that was the biggest thing. I found that being mentally prepared for anything was a game changer.
Did you keep your doula as well for support?
Yeah, so she was there. My doula was also an osteo. She did a lot of work on my back when I had back pain. And I did some yoga classes with her as well, which helped just with learning how to breathe and learning how to relax my mind when I start thinking about pain or stressful feelings. So I had, again, a lot of people on my team this time, but the good thing is it was everyone that I knew and everyone that I wanted to be there, as opposed to in hospital. There was a lot of people in the room that I didn't know that were going in and out, that didn't really tell me what they were doing. And I just felt completely lost. So a completely different experience. And this time being at home, I was also able to have a photographer through the birth, which was something I didn't have last time. So that was really nice. We were really lucky because during that week that I gave birth, we were in lockdown in Melbourne and there was no visitors allowed, and there was a 5-kilometer radius, but the lockdown was due to end on a Wednesday. It was like a five-day lockdown. And I remember thinking to myself, oh, I hope my baby doesn't come before lockdown ends. The photographer had also said to me, oh, if you want me to be there, it will really need to be on Wednesday, because after that I'm fully booked. And of course I can't come before that because we're in lockdown. So if your baby comes anytime from midday, from midnight until 5 p.m., then I can be there for your birth. And luckily for me, I went into labor around 2 a.m. that night that lockdown ended. So that was really lucky. So I managed to get, and she was the one who took the photos of my baby the first time when I was in hospital, just like my fresh 48 photos. So that was really nice to have the same photographer again.
Was uterine rupture something that was on your mind during your VBAC pregnancy, or something that you looked into at all?
Yeah, I definitely looked into it, but I didn't feel that it was too much of an issue because the risks based on my research were not significantly increased than any other woman giving birth that has not had a C-section. I was happy with knowing that it's probably unlikely to happen. And also because my midwife had a lot of experience with thousands of births. I think she's been a midwife for about 30 years. So she's done a lot of births. She's done a lot of home births. She's worked both in the hospital and at home. And I think she said in her career, she had only seen maybe one uterine rupture, which ended okay, actually. It was not a devastating result. We had a really detailed birth plan that involved, you know, what to do if she suspects that it might be happening. She assured me that, you know, she would be keeping track of my body language and how I'm going. And if she suspects that anything's going to happen in terms of uterine rupture, we would then go to hospital or call an ambulance. I figured with birth, it's so unpredictable. Anything can happen. And at the end of the day, if there's no significant risks and you've had a healthy pregnancy and you're low risk, then I would first assume that you have a normal labor. And then, of course, you just plan, you plan for the worst still, you plan for the worst, but you just go about things as if they will be okay. That's kind of how my thought process was like. Yeah, I wasn't thinking, oh, I could, you know, I could rupture any moment. I just didn't want that kind of thought to be at the front of my birth experience.
Do you want to take us now, I suppose, to the end of that second pregnancy and what unfolded there?
I was actually late for my labor. So my baby was born 41 weeks and 5 days. So he came late. And I think normally if I was going through the hospital system, they wouldn't have let me go that late. But because I was going privately, my midwives were still happy for me to wait until my baby comes naturally, which was something that I really appreciated, that they were not going to push me into going into hospital to see about getting induced or anything like that. But there's something that I also found out is that if you have the VBAC, they do not induce you. That's what my hospital told me. Anyway, so if you're late, really late, they would probably just get you to have a repeat C-section.
Did you go into spontaneous labor?
Yeah, so I went into spontaneous labor around 2 a.m. at night when I was sleeping. So my waters just broke. I was like in a deep sleep and my water just broke and I just woke up feeling wet and I was like, oh, okay, I think my water broke. And then I saw my husband and he's like, oh, okay. And so we just went downstairs and called the midwife and called the doula, called my mom, called the photographer as well. Yeah, everyone came within the hour and the birth pool was set up within the hour. My husband did all the setting up with the doula. Doula lives just a few minutes from my house, so she was there first. We lit up some candles around the room. We had fairy lights around the house as well. My doula put the like beautiful aromatherapy in the room with the diffuser, got music going, which was very relaxing. And they started filling up the pool. And of course, my contractions just started getting more and more intense and closer together. And I was fine. I was just walking around the room and doing what I needed to do, just feeling each contraction and sort of just listening to my affirmations. I had my affirmations playing in the background as well. It was just very peaceful and easygoing for the first hour. And then after about an hour, things started to get more intense. And then that's when I got into the pool. I was laboring in the pool for a while. But then after some time, I started getting the urge to push. And I think that started around 3 a.m. That's when I started feeling like I need to push. And so then my midwife said, okay, well, if you feel like you need to push, then definitely push. Don't resist it because that's your fetal ejection reflex. I was trying to go with what my body was doing. And so I was pushing for a long time. Like I would push and then the contraction would completely go away and I wouldn't feel any pain at all. And then it would come back again and it would be extremely strong and intense. And then I would push again. But because nothing much was happening in terms of my labor progressing as fast as my midwife wanted it to be progressing, she actually got me to get out of the pool and walk around. So I did a lot of walking around and I even sat on the toilet a little bit. So I labored a little bit on the toilet, was hanging off the door, doing lots of different squatting positions, putting my legs up and down. So completely different from the hospital. The hospital, I was just on my back flat, didn't move, didn't change positions. But at home, I did maybe 20, 30 different positions. I was just doing so many things just to help the baby move down my pelvis and in the pool as well at the beginning, which really helped But by the time 5 o'clock came, I was just so exhausted because I had been having contractions, very strong ones, on and off every minute for 2 hours. I was just so tired. So my midwife got me to lay down and push laying down just to preserve my energy. And around 5:55 is when I managed to do my last few pushes, and then my baby came out. So when he came out, they dried him off and put him straight onto my chest. And I did skin to skin. I had a few pictures with my photographer. And I remember being in pain, excited, and in disbelief, just having so many emotions at the same time. And my placenta actually came out really quickly. It came out within like 3 to 5 minutes. So that was something that I wasn't expecting. Shortly after I held my baby, I started getting extremely strong contractions. My placenta was already out, but I was getting really strong contractions, which I found out later was the afterbirth pains, afterbirth contractions, which are exacerbated with breastfeeding as well. And also even just holding your baby can just bring that on. And so for me, it was really hard to actually hold my baby after once that started. I actually didn't want to hold him. I was like, no, don't bring him next to me. I don't want to hold him because he's making me feel so much pain. I don't want to hold him. So I didn't want to hold him actually. And I just didn't feel right actually. I was happy, but I was just so tired. I was so exhausted. My midwives proceeded then to massage my abdomen. And we were just all sort of relaxing and packing up, and I was just laying down and relaxing. And my mom and my husband were taking turns to hold the baby, and he was fine. He was just perfect, and he didn't have any issues at all. But yeah, the only thing I have to say was a bit of a complication was that after about an hour or so of lying down, and after my daughter had already met my son, because she woke up around 6:30, and so she came straight down to meet him when he was born, which was really special. But after some time, I started feeling really dizzy, like really, really dizzy. Then they wanted me to go upstairs, so just to go lay down and have a sleep in my bed. But when I went to get up, I was just so dizzy that, you know, I couldn't really walk. And I just felt this rush of blood just coming out of me. I went to the toilet and some clots just passed through. And yeah, that made me feel like I was going to pass out. So then my midwife gave me an injection of Syntocin, because she thought I was having a bit of a bleed. And then she massaged me, my fundus a lot more, and pressed on, you know, my abdomen really hard to stop the bleeding. But I was just feeling so dizzy still. And I was still in a lot of pain. Just the afterbirth pains were super strong for me. I just did not, they were probably worse than the labor, I'll have to say. The afterbirth. Wow. Yeah. And so because my pain was just so extreme and I had lost a bit of blood, we ended up calling the ambulance, and then I had a hospital transfer just for pain management and just to make sure I hadn't lost too much blood. And so when I got to hospital, they gave me painkillers, ended up getting I think about 10 milligrams of morphine injection. So that was good because I was in so much pain, but it took them a long time. It took about, I think, almost 2 hours of being in hospital in pain for them to decide to give me morphine, because they were umming and ahhing about whether they should give it to me since I wanted to breastfeed, which is something that I don't understand, because when I had my C-section, they gave me tramadol, morphine, endone, like a whole cocktail of all these medications. At any time I wanted, I could just have as many as I wanted. But after giving birth naturally, they were very reluctant to give me anything at all. So I didn't really understand the logic behind that, because I was breastfeeding both times. It took them a while to finally give me medication, but they did eventually, and then that was helpful. And then I just had they gave me a drip of just a saline, some IV fluid, and then I was fine. And then I went home the next day, because I got there already late in the afternoon or almost in the evening.
Did you have, was that classed as a postpartum hemorrhage or significant blood loss? What did they tell you in the end had gone on there?
Yeah, I think it was classed as a hemorrhage. I lost an estimate of about 800 to a litre of blood. So I think they classed it as a hemorrhage. It was still within the normal limits of how much blood loss that a woman would have anyway if she were to give birth. Yeah. But the one thing that I did not appreciate with the hospital, the nurses and midwives were lovely when I did go to hospital, but the doctor that was discharging me, he was really, really nasty and really like angry with me that I had a home birth. He was basically just telling me off like I'm a little kid, like, oh, you shouldn't have had a home birth, they're so dangerous and things like that. But at the end of the day, it was his personal opinion, and what I felt he should have done would be to say, hey, you know, you've had a little bit of a bleed. Perhaps next time, you know, you might consider giving birth in hospital, because then we can address this straight away. But of course, I expected this in hospital. Even my midwife, she kind of expected the hospital to say something like that, but she was also really frustrated and annoyed with his response, because it was not a professional response. It was just his personal opinion about how he feels. And he said something like, oh, look, I don't care if you come to this hospital. You're not my mother. You're not my daughter. You're not my sister. So I don't really care if you come here. But I'm just telling you that home births are really bad and you shouldn't have a home birth ever. And so he was just very rude to me, and that was not a good experience. After having a beautiful home birth experience and even having a good hospital transfer, because the ambulance officers were very nice, all the midwives in the hospital were very nice, and a lot of them were very excited that I actually had a home birth and wanting to know more, and they were really happy for me and happy that I had a VBAC. And you know, everyone was really supportive in the hospital, except for that doctor that was discharging me.
And yeah, sorry. Postpartum hemorrhages or blood loss, that occurs in hospital as well. So I lost, 800 to 900 mils of blood in my VBAC. I was in a hospital. So it's not the fact that you've chosen to home birth that's affecting or causing the blood loss.
Exactly. And the thing is, my midwife managed it at home, because when I got to hospital, my bleeding had completely stopped. It had already stopped because she gave me the Syntocin at home and she did some more massage at home, which completely stopped the bleeding. So I wasn't bleeding. I didn't have any further loss, and they were monitoring for more loss when there was not any more significant bleeds after the management I had at home. So, you know, it wasn't like I was in a bad way when I got there, basically. I just needed that pain management more than anything. It was the afterbirth pain. So I think if I were to have another birth at home, I would probably just organize to have painkillers for after I give birth. That would be something that I would include in my birth plan.
Did you tear?
Yes, I did have a tear. Yes. So I had a second degree tear. It was a little bit complicated because it took a long time to heal. It took almost 9 weeks to heal. That was something that I did not expect to happen. There may be a few reasons why. I think the biggest reason was because it was my first birth. I don't know if consecutive births have less tears, but that's what I've heard, that if you have more babies, you tend to tear less, although some women tear more. I'm not sure. Just, I guess, depending on your body. But being a first birth, also, I didn't give birth in the water, and I was laying down on my back when I did give birth, when I did push him out, and it was a very sort of fast push as well. So there's a few things I think might have led to the tear. But the biggest thing was that it just took forever to heal. That was my big thing about the tear.
With your first birth, your baby wasn't posterior or anything, right? Like, they didn't say that.
I don't know what position she was in when I was going to give birth. I do know that at about 35, 36 weeks with my first pregnancy, she was actually breached. They attempted to turn her twice. The first time didn't work and the second time did. So I had two ECVs and the second one worked.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. That's interesting. Yeah. Because you know how you were sort of pushing, I guess, early in your first birth and they were saying, try not to push because you weren't 10 centimeters yet. Sometimes, you know, it's because the baby's posterior and there's a cervical lip. So I was just trying to understand whether that was a factor at all. But, you know, they didn't mention it to you that the baby was born posterior. And normally they always say, oh, look, you had a posterior baby, or they tend to say it. So it's
they didn't say it. But my midwife, when I was speaking to her, the one who helped me with my second birth, she suspected that might have been the case because she said she's been in situations like that many times and was able to get, I guess, past that lip situation and then help the baby down. I think just the midwives I had in hospital were not keen on doing anything without the obstetrician there. They're not like the midwives you have at home. The midwives at home, they're very skilled and very confident in their own ability to direct you in what to do. Whereas in hospital, it's mainly, you know, they take obs, they do checks, but they don't instruct you a lot like they do at home. And I think it's just that they're not allowed to do a lot of things without the obstetrician there if they think that there might be a bit of a complication. Yeah. And then of course obstetricians like to just jump to interventions that may actually cause things like C-section and or forceps birth or things like that, I think. Yeah.
Did you listen to us as well while you were pregnant?
Yes, I did, absolutely. I see all the posts on Instagram. I find them really like helpful, reading all the stories there, clicking all the useful links that you guys put on the Instagram page. And it's been extremely helpful for me. And that's why I tend to share your page with a lot of women that want to have VBAC. And another thing is, I just have to say like that whilst the VBAC was definitely an amazing thing for me to achieve, it wasn't necessarily easier than a C-section for me, because I know that for some people they might say that, you know, VBAC was a lot easier than the C-section, or that they felt better with a natural vaginal birth. But for me, they were equally challenging. Both of them were very difficult in terms of recovery. There's pros and cons to both, but I'm still happy with the outcome for my VBAC, mainly surrounding the fact that I felt more in control, I had more autonomy, I was in an environment I felt comfortable with, and given the circumstances of COVID, I was extremely lucky to have my mum, my husband, doula, and photographer, like all those people there to support my birth. So
definitely sounds like you took back control over that whole process, and regardless of the restrictions, you decided to turn it into the experience that you really wanted. Which is great that you were able to do that and have such a positive experience.
So if there's any mums out there that want to have a VBAC, the biggest thing is to do your research, find out what birth providers will support your VBAC. So you need to be comfortable with the provider that you're working with. If you've got any doubts about anything, try to get clarification. Reach out to other mums that have had a VBAC and see what's worked for them. And of course, accept the fact that sometimes what works for one person is not going to work for the other. Everybody's experience is different. Everyone's recovery is different, just like everyone's pregnancy is different. Have realistic expectations. There's a lot of positive births out there that you can get strength and inspiration from, but if things don't go perfectly according to plan, don't be too dismayed, because at the end of the day, the most important thing is to have your baby with you and to be safe and, yeah, just to become a mom, however that happens. And if you do end up with an outcome you're not happy with, it's important to get help. And one thing that I really recommend, which happened this time, that didn't happen last time for me, was that I was able to debrief with my doula. So even though things went relatively okay, of course I ended up having the hospital transfer, having the root doctor, and having a little bit of a bleed and the tear. So those are the four things that kind of I was a little bit down about at the end. And just debriefing with my doula helped me just to put things into perspective and go, hey, you know, this was actually a really good, positive birth. And of course, I'm in pain. Of course, I'm tired. Of course, I'm recovering and all those things, and all your hormones are all over the place. It's really helpful just to debrief with somebody. Could be your midwife or doula. I'm not sure if a birth partner would be able to help you as much, but someone professional I would recommend to debrief with is a good idea after your birth experience. Yeah,
that's some good advice. Thanks, Michelle, for chatting to us. I think a lot of women listening will gain a lot from hearing your story. So thank you so much for sharing that with us. And yeah, we wish you all the best. Thanks for chatting to us.
All right. Thank you so much for having me. I've enjoyed speaking to both of you, and yeah, keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you for listening to this feedback journey. If you like the show, please subscribe, leave us a review, or consider joining our Patreon. We thank you very much for your support.
VBAC Birth Stories is a podcast where we share women's lived experiences. Please be advised that it's not intended to replace medical advice. If you have any concerns at all during your pregnancy, please always speak to your healthcare provider.